Welcome to Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding, the Deemer Box Artist of the Month edition featuring Drake White, powered by Bad Boy Mowers. Power, performance, attitude.
Hanging out here, getting the good stuff from Drake White.
Yeah, man.
Drake is a fan of other artists, but he always bets on himself.
I love, you know, Muscadine Budline, Red Clay Strays, Brett Cobb, Tyler Childers, Stapleton's obviously the best. Am I not fans of those guys, and can I not root for those guys? Absolutely. But do I want to beat them? Yeah.
What does it take to get to the world's most famous arena? Drake is stacking the deck to make his dreams become a reality.
I'm a very powerful dreamer. You take all these lessons and you stack the odds. I have the power, and you do too, and anybody out here listening, to manifest anything that they want. I'm going to pack out Madison Square Garden. I'll be there.
This episode of Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody is brought to you by the Nashville Palace, American Almond Beef, The Provider, and Jack Links. Get ready to get country with Chad Belding and Drake White.
I like spring and dogs and rusty screen doors. Candlelight on creaky wood floors. A good sunrise and fireflies and a jar, yes.
What's up, Drake? I like that wall.
Man, we got all kind of stuff. We got Hope's Bluff, where I'm from. This one right here behind me. You can see that. That's Willie Nelson's Country Throwdown. You see this?
Willie Nelson, Jamie Johnson. I went to that. Was that in California?
Yeah. I mean, there was 30 dates on that show, but it was me, Brent Cobb, Jamie Johnson, Randy Houser, Lucas Nelson, Lee Bryce, Brantley Gilbert, Craig Campbell, Brent Cobb. Man, it was 2011, dude. That was our first tour.
And Willie Nelson. Was that the one that one of you guys like went out and got real sunburned and barely could play that night or something?
That sounds about right. I mean, I remember Lee Bryce getting so sunburned he couldn't move.
Yeah, I remember hearing, I think you or Brett Cobb was telling me a story that you guys went out in the ocean or something and almost did not make the show because of a little too much day partying, day drinking.
That would make sense. And that, I mean, we were, what, 22 or 25? So,
did you just like literally get back in Nashville last night? You're on the road heavy right now, yeah?
Yeah, we're on the road. We didn't have any shows this weekend for the first time in about 2 months. So it was good to just kind of reset and sprayed some fields around the house that I've got working with some clover and just kind of ate too much. And my little boy, Hawk, he took his first steps the other day. So we're doing that and just had a good day with the fam and just kind of chilled out. We didn't really go anywhere. We just kind of chilled out here on Whitewood Hollow.
Talk to me about that memorabilia behind you, though. As far as holding stuff close to your heart, have you done a good job, Drake White, in collecting that stuff and keeping it for the future? Or has it been such a wild ride that you haven't had time? Do you feel you've done a good job of pumping the brakes and slowing down and realizing how blessed you are with a lot of those posters behind you? And I know there's a lot more that you haven't framed and hung up, but do you feel like you've done a good job of capturing how blessed you've been in your career?
Yeah, I really do. It's definitely not been a crazy, like, fast ride to the top. You know, you've followed it. You know, you've been with us. We've been friends for over 10 years now. And for me, it all stems, you know, being from Alabama, I frequented the Floribama a lot. And I frequented this place called Red Bar. I'm pretty sure you've been to Red Bar. But the way that the memorabilia is on the walls there, I think that every man – maybe not every man, but like I am real privy to junk. Like I don't even call it junk, but over here I've got my Rangers flag that I got when you came to me. We played for those 700 Army Rangers in Eglin, the Eglin base. And I just think that whole Red Bar kind of Floribama mentality has always been in me. My aunts are interior designers and I've always liked the man cave kind of clubhouse and having – there's pictures of me and, you know, Kid Rock up here. There's pictures of me and Jamie and me and Willie. You know, it just goes on and on. First deer kills, first rattlesnake kills. And this room is kind of full of that for me. And I have to have that spot because we live these wild lives. So I do think I've done a good job at it. Yeah.
How does it work between artists? You guys are very private people. You're very busy and you're always... You always seem to have to be on when it's touring time, studio time, songwriting time, media time, promotion time. How do you communicate within the realms of Nashville? Is it nothing for you to get up and text Bobby Ritchie or Kid Rock and say, hey, let's write today? Or text Jamie Johnson and say, hey, we're both in Alabama today. We're both from here. Let's write. Like, how does the communication among, or is it just, am I overthinking it? And it's just like a normal friendship and you guys just leave each other alone for the most part and might reach out once in a while.
I think it's more the latter, Chad, really. I mean, you know, with baby now and Alex, my priorities when I'm here are them and spending time with them, especially when you're on tour, when you're working on a record and that kind of stuff. And you know that of all people, you know, having your little one. But really, diversification of time is something that I've paid attention to over the last really 10 years, but especially the last year and a half, 2 years since Hawk's been born. And whether it be Zach or, you know, Bobby or any of these guys, you know, I try to just treat it like any other thing. You know, if we're going somewhere, if I see something that he's interested in or I'm interested in, and, you know, a meme, there's a lot of memes that go around. But yeah, we don't, you know, I try to just treat it like any other relationship, because that time is so sacred that when you're with your kid or when you're at home, like when I'm at Whitewood Hollow, a lot of times my phone is in here, is in my house when I'm outside. Like, I'm not even connected to it. And I think that's what fuels my muse and being able to be present with my dog and my kid and Alex. And that's the reason I like spending time with a one-year-old golden retriever and a one-year-old kid, is because they have no concept of business or time, or they don't have an angle of what's tomorrow or what's behind them. It's what I wrote Back to Free for. It's what I wrote the new one I've got, Life, Love, and War, the Optimistics, from that seven-year-old that's just learned how to ride a bicycle with no training wheels. That's what disconnecting to reconnect means to me, you know.
You mentioned writing Back to Free. Do you talk about that album anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Do you freely talk about it? Do you like talking about it? Does it ever get brought up of how special that body of work was?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I was raised by a bunch of kind of Alabama, I call it Alabama construction workers, you know, and you know what that means, right? Like, mm-hmm. just people that, you know, you swing a hammer, you go build the house, there's the house, there's the landscaping job, there's the things. And there's a toughness to that mentality of, like, you know, that body of work's done. And there's an underdog type of mentality to the blue collaredness of what I grew up around. And I'm proud of that. But I don't consider myself underrated or an underdog. It just didn't really get, you know, I've made a lot of changes in my career, and we've taken a long time to get where we're at. And I'll say we're in the best touring spot we've ever been. We're doing the best numbers we've ever done. And I attribute a lot of that to streaming. I mean, it really is like high school, man. This click up here in Nashville is like high school. And you know what I mean by that? It's like running for prom king or whatever. And a lot of us as artists are not like that. So it's very important to connect with the artist and say, you know what? I feel like I'm competing with myself. So to answer your question, Spark for me was never, you know, obviously it was never as big as I thought it should be. I loved that record. I thought it was something that was, and I still think it's a phenomenal record, or I wouldn't have released it. You know, I'm very proud of that record and still think it's got life in it. You know, I still think there's songs on that record that the masses have not heard, you know?
Oh, I think it's song to song one of the best albums. I mean, it very easily could have been nominated for album of the year that year. You had a huge hit with There You Go Making Me Look Good Again on it. But there's so many just great stories. I could talk about it till I'm blue in the face, Drake White. That album was a masterclass in country music, country writing, song to song, taking the listener on an experience that just brought him in and out of so many, like even the last song about waiting on the whiskey to work. Is that the last song on there, or was Elvis the last song?
I think so.
Waiting on the Whiskey to Work is just a great, great Drake White country song. You mentioned streaming, you mentioned high school mentality of running for, you know, prom king and homecoming king and queen and all that. What is the temperature like in Nashville right now? It's a melting pot of a lot of different music. There's a lot of stuff in there, a lot of stuff coming out of Nashville that I would not deem traditional country music, but it's been that way for a while. Heck, mm-hmm. you might not even consider everything you do traditional country music. I don't even know what traditional country music means anymore. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Are there traditional, like, I think John Party's country, but is he, he's like a George Strait kind of country. I think that, and I'm talking people that are like mainstream right now. What is the temperature like? How do you go about your day, Drake? Like figuring out what you want. Are you in your lane and your numbers are growing? You're building this fan base, this cult following, and that's what you're happy with. That's what your concentration is. And you've done past those days of trying to figure out what's going on 16th and 17th Avenue.
I think, yeah. I mean, I've always just kind of done what I felt, you know. You go write, try not to overthink it. You go and write your songs and you put it out there, and whatever it is what it is, you know. I try to have fun. This is fun. I started doing this for fun, and it became my career and became something I'm very passionate about. But the temperature in Nashville is really, really exciting right now. It's because of the diversity of streaming and just the boom of Nashville in general, and all of LA moving, a lot of LA people, New York people, a lot of people wanting to get into these. I think it's a turn towards the morals and the values of the land and of how you can be in Nashville and be here. And I mean, you've been to my spot. Like, it's, I mean, you're in the country. You're in the country at John Party's spot. And the business is always competitive. And we have this group of people that meet together, and a group of artists. There's 30 or 40 of us that, if I said all 30 of them, you would know them. And we met together, and a very good point was made, Chad, in that the suits of this business, meaning labels, lawyers, the music business, they meet every day for lunch, and they exchange, publishers, they exchange information, right? They talk to each other. They are in direct competition with each other. Like, they are competing. Warner's competing with Universal. Universal's competing. They're competing, right? They share stories every day. They share information. They share numbers. They share all this stuff. We opened up the can of worms of, as an artist, especially a man with this competitive nature, we're all competitive. You know, I'm very competitive, and we can get to that. My preacher talked about that yesterday in our service. We can get to the competitive nature of humans. But as a artist, I'm extremely competitive in that I want to win. And not only do I want to win, I'm going to win. I'm going to, like, that's my mentality. I'm going to figure out a way to win. But why don't we talk to each other? My point is, all those lawyers and suits talk to each other every day and exchange information. Why don't we as artists get together and exchange information? Hey, this is how much I just bought a bus. This is how much my bus cost. This is how much, watch out for that I-65, that part right there, that wore my tires out. Watch out for that promoter. That promoter screwed me. Watch out for this guy, or this guy's absolutely great. Why don't we, it's all managers having these conversations. And you do have to rely on those managers some, but you have to, being an independent artist now, I've really learned my business, buying my bus, learning my logistics, learning how much it cost me to go to St. Petersburg and go to Tallahassee, play those shows. And I've always been pretty good at it. But like, now, why are we not as artists getting together and saying, hey, this is how you rent equipment. You don't do what the manager's saying and rent the equipment all year. If you're doing 60 shows this year, do your 60 shows in 3 months and rent it for 3 months. That's going to save you a $200,000 or $100,000. Why aren't we sharing that information? Because that's what makes this business. That's what makes you be able to continue recording music. You've watched me. Like, there's no reason. I've had so many opportunities to quit, whether it be health or, you know, there's no big explosion of commercial success right off the bat. But I'm extremely proud and happy of the scenic route that I've had to take and got to take. I consider it an honor to have these calluses on my heart, my hands, you know, that I'm out here doing it. And the songs are, and the albums, you know, prove that. And the friendships and the people that I'm healing, and what God has flipped on its back and shown that, man, yeah, you've had a lot of heartache and all that competitive nature. You've spent a lot of time up bedside going, why not me, or why not this, or why not that? But it's all paying off. And I've just kind of chilled out in the last, definitely since the injury, man. It was a perspective shift of like, what's important? You know, my songs are important. Winning's important. Records are important, but it's not the most important thing. And it's freed it up. It's freed up the pressure. Does that make sense?
100%. Do you ever try to look inside the Drake White crystal ball and see what's going to happen with all of the calluses on your heart the calluses on your hands, the ladders you've climbed, the roadmap that you have not followed, but paved your own way to get to where you're at now. Do you ever want to know what's next? Do you ever, I know you don't get in a hurry, and that's the point, is that you've slowed down, you pump the brakes and you're letting it happen. But what can happen out of this, Drake? What can become of the Drake White career right now with all of this momentum and all of these sold out shows, this great body of music that keeps a crowd entertained for an hour and a half, hour 45, 2 hours? Do you ever look in the crystal ball and wonder what can happen? Because I don't know. Like, I don't, what can happen in the music industry? Is anything possible?
Yeah. I mean, it always has been, man. I mean, and that's just, that's my mentality. I think that I'm enjoying myself. My heart is fulfilled going out there and sharing my story, sharing how you come from a stroke and come back out of that. And then these songs came from it, and this song came from it. And I understand now why God, I'm starting to understand and understanding why God brought me through all that stuff to where I was pissed off at first. And I was like, why me? Now I understand why God brought me through that struggle, is to where I could use that testimony and that test to create a testimony that was worthy of, there's an authority that comes with that. Like, and my intentions have always been good. But now I just kind of trim the fluff and the fact that, like, man, it's pretty simple to me to keep good people around me, keep love in my heart, and just keep moving forward. And that sounds very simple, but I will say this, I'm still the competitive SOB that's going to get up and go, dadgummit, I wish them tires would have came in. That's what I'm waiting on right now, is a set of tires. Or dadgummit, Riley should have cut that song. Or, you know, Jamie didn't call me back. Or like, what is, and I'm just making stuff up. But like, all that stuff goes through my head. But now I have the tools, Chad, of like knowing what to do with those thoughts, the negative thoughts. And I'm calling them negative thoughts because it is anything that takes away from the momentum or the energy that is pushing towards great innovation and great songs and great stuff. Like, I consider that something taking from me. You know what I mean? You're either given or you're taken. And so for me, I just try to stay in that mindset, and I have to work at it really, really hard. It's not easy. I have to work at it really hard because the negative is way louder than the positive. You have to seek out the positive. But I've become a very, very efficient optimist in the fact that I've named my last record after it, you know. The optimistic is keeping your glass half full through the mystery of life. And if people on here have heard me talk, I may sound like a broken record, but damn it, man. Like, that's what I've learned through the stroke and learning how to walk again and watching Alex navigate fertility issues and then watching God's grace just pour over us over and over again, watching the bank account. What happened to it? Oh, but now it's back. And then watching you guys lend a hand, Brandon Adams lend a hand, you know, my friends, my people that come, and then watching it all disappear, like people going through COVID and people not calling anybody back and not understanding why that was happening. And then the benefit for the brain happenings, like, oh, it is working. Just keep going and understanding that enjoying the process is something that I'm daily pursuing, like remembering, hey, remember to enjoy the process. Remember you're doing great. Remember you are winning. And remember, what are you learning here? How are you helping others through that? You know,
as social media has taken us, it seems like everybody has credibility now. Everybody's got a channel. Everybody has authority. Everybody has the ability to get their message out there. And hey, it's evolution. It happens. You got to keep up with the Joneses. You talked about not looking at the negative in things, and it's harder to find the positive in things. How do you as a man use these tools? Because country music has changed, man. You can get a record deal off of TikTok now instead of coming up in the honky-tonks for 20 years like you guys did and Travis Tritt did and a lot of my heroes in country music, the way they came up. You can't argue the fact that it's different now. You can just put out a song on a social media platform and get some notoriety and start selling tickets and get a record deal potentially. How do you navigate social media now, Drake? Do you stay off of it? Do you use it as a tool and that's it? How do you keep it? Because me personally,
yeah,
I try not to follow anything. I want to stay in my lane. I want to work on what I'm working on. Of course, I hear what's going on in this industry of duck and goose hunting and the outdoors. and our competition in Bandit and our competition in the Foul Life and Jargon, whatever it may be, I try to keep it out of my psyche and just keep doing me. Is it almost impossible with how much is out there to follow these other musicians? Does it weigh on you like it weighs on me if you get on there and use that as more than just a tool to keep your music in front of people? If that question makes sense?
Yeah. I think the perspective shift of having the kid, and I don't mean to discount what you're saying, because like I obviously have, I mean, I've been jealous before. I don't consider myself a jealous person, but I've been jealous. I've asked, why not me? I've asked, oh man, is my time up? Am I to this? Am I to that? So for me, social media is a tool to reach the masses independently. And so I focus on the good things that it is. TikTok's a bit of a conundrum because it's just a wilder west thing. But so I have a great content curator in Zach Knudsen, and Devin's wife, Kirsten, helped me a lot with TikTok because she's really, really good at it and talented. So it's back to proximity is power. Like the things that I can't do well, that I don't necessarily enjoy, that do not give me, fill my tank up, is sitting by a computer and trying to edit a video to be cool or perfect. Like, no, that's, I know what's cool. I know what I want it to feel like and look like and smell like, but I can't sit at this computer for 2 hours and edit a video. That's not who I am. So I put those people around me and I pay them, you know, to make my socials look and feel amazing. Because at the end of the day, from a business standpoint, it's my job. I have the ability to sit here, and the pandemic proved that with the barn shows, you know, I can sing to 10,000 people for $100 of upfront cost, you know, doesn't cost me anything. Well, to go sing to 1,500 people in St. Petersburg, Florida, well, that cost me $3,200 to get down there, to get everybody down there, to get the band or whatever it is, you know, the gas, the, so you have to use it. Same way with AI. I'm not afraid of any of this stuff because it's just evolution. Either you're going to get on the AI train or you're going to get left behind, because that's some brilliant stuff. Like, it saves a lot of time. So I dabble in the stuff that intrigue me, and then the stuff that's taking away from me, like, you know what I mean? Like, dadgummit, I hit enter and it erased the whole damn thing. What am I doing? And I'm listening to my baby down there cry or learn to walk. And you're like, I'm up here. That's the gut thing of like, oh, well, let me get down there and let Zach handle this. Let me delegate this. So I try. I'd be lying to you, Chad Belding, if I told you that I didn't get jealous every now and then, or if I didn't see something and go, dang, that's cool. I wish I'd have thought of that. That's just life. I mean, but am I more towards the latter of what you were explaining of like staying in my lane, staying in my thing? Like, I love the right now, you know, Muscadine Bloodline, Red Clay Strays, Brent Cobb, Tyler Childers, you know, Stapleton's obviously the best of, you know, in my mind. It's like, am I not fans of those guys and can I not root for those guys? Absolutely. But do I want to beat them? Yeah. Yeah, I want to beat them. I don't even know what that looks like. But you don't have to beat them. We're not in competition. There's room for all of us. There's room for the Beyonce stuff that's happening. There's room for Red and Yellow, Black and White, man. It's music, dude. It's all good. Like, everybody can come in here. And I love streaming and the voice that it's giving everybody and what socials are giving everybody. Like, bring it on. You know, if you've honed in your craft to where you can amass hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers, then good on you, man. And if it was a fluke, it'll show itself pretty soon, you know. I've been doing this for going on 20 years, man. I'll never stop because this is my God-given talent, and this is what makes me happy. So my spirit's good, man. My spirit's good with that stuff, and I feel like at 40, I'm mature enough. Not like it goes in waves, you know, but I feel like I can catch myself, go, no, click on and keep doing what you're doing. You know, you're doing good.
Are you telling me that it doesn't matter who you are? You have a place in country music. What is considered country music? Beyonce can put out a song called Texas Hold'em and just be a country music artist now. Like, she's never paid her dues as country artist. She's got talent. I'm not ever going to say that. But you're telling me with what you just said, Drake White, that it doesn't matter who you are. I don't care race, creed, color. I don't care about any of that. But you're telling me that it doesn't matter who you are, what you write about, what you sing about, what attitude you portray, what ideologies you've portrayed. Anybody can be a country music artist now? Is it okay that Jelly Roll was in prison forever? Or not forever, but he went and he got all these tattoos and now all of a sudden he says, I'm back and I'm a good person and I am the face of country music. This is all okay. Beyonce gets a song on the radio. This is all okay. I'm not saying that it's not. I'm simply asking questions of like, what is a country music artist? When I grew up, I thought Merle Haggard was a country music artist and Don Williams and Waylon, but maybe they had past that weren't really what country music is. Have we been trying to define this country music artistship too much to where there's really no definition for it? Nelly's gone country music. There's rappers on country music. There's R&B singers on country music. Justin Timberlake, who was in a boy band, has been on country music. He lives in Nashville part-time, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Are you telling me that anybody can be in country music?
I see how this answer, which I haven't thought about the answer, and I'm going to think about it before I answer it. But my red flag's going off in the fact that this is one of those things that can be taken out of context. If I just casually said, well, yeah, everybody's welcome, you know? So I don't want that to happen. And I'm not really worried about that. I don't care. At the end of the day, your question is you ask about the morals and the values. Well, everybody's.
Yes, that's a great way to put it, Drake, is there's used to be morals and values of country music and the country lifestyle, in my opinion. I was brought up on good storytelling, country music, Alan Jackson, Randy Travis, Mark Chestnut, Merle Haggard. Like, there was morals and values. There was drinking, and there was sex, and there was life. But is there no more of that to become part of this unbelievable group of artists that were deemed country music? I don't know. That's what I'm asking. Sorry to interrupt you.
No. Well, I mean, it's the lust of the flesh. I mean, in Galatians 5:6-8 goes back to the Bible for me every time. And that may turn a lot of people off on this thing, but I don't, that's where the basis of everything that I speak about or write about comes from, is a filter through that. I hope that's what I was raised to do. And I've watched that biblically. I've watched it be my shield, and I've let it, you know, it's been confusing at times, and I brought it up and tried to read it and tried to get through the stroke with it. And it just keeps giving to me and keeps living and keeps moving. The word does. And it is the lust of the flesh, you know, all of that stuff. We're always going to have, it's always going to keep expanding as far as, you know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, some people would say that a risque song back in the day was I Feel Like a Woman. I mean, that wouldn't have worked in the 50s, you know, wouldn't have worked in the 40s, whatever. I Feel Like a Woman. Women didn't even, you know, women's rights have came a long way in 40, 50 years. So that's something to be proud about. I think whether you talk about, you know, Cardi B or you talk about one of the edgier, provocative, man, that's art. For me, provocative stuff. Like I love Jesus. I will declare it on this thing and I want him to be exalted at all cost. But every human has the right to go down the path that they want to go down. And if you're an artist and you choose this one or that one, then that's your choice. And I can't judge it. You can't judge it. The only person that can judge it is God himself. And man, it's a slippery question, Chad. It really is. I'm dancing around it a little bit, but I think, yeah, make your art, make your music, and let the people decide if it's country. I mean, would Brantley Gilbert have been country, you know, years ago? I don't know. He's talking about dirt roads. He's talking about what you deem as country. You know, would some kid from Reno be talking about the same country as some kid from Alabama? I don't know. No, because it's not the same country. It's a totally different country. In Alabama, there's a church and a gas station on every corner. And in Reno, there's a brothel, a strip club and a casino on every corner. Your country is going to be different, man. And I'm, as an artist, as I grow older, I get more conservative. But, man, I'm for the storyteller, man. That's what good country music is to me. It is the story. And, man, we put rhyme to the reason, man. We put it into words of what you're trying to articulate. Man, what does that ocean mean to you? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? And so I am kind of there's a part of me that says, you know what, Merle Haggard or bust. And that's a good, tough answer, right? That's an Alabama hammer swinging. But man, then you go listen to like Michael Franti. Are you listening to Dave Matthews? Dave Matthews has got country songs all day. You know, if it's country to me, then it's country. You know, it's so subjective. That's why music is, we shouldn't argue on what is country and what is not country. We should push and help artists create more freely and push them to elevate their creations. That's what's going to make better art. That's what made Athens do what Athens did in the Greek times. That's what's making Nashville pop right now, because there's so much, there's an influx of all this money coming from where? From streaming and from the internet and from who knows. And so it's giving some of these artists that you wouldn't see normally the freedom, because they got $500 a month coming in or $800 a month where they're putting it back in their music. So I think that's a good thing. And I'm not just trying to be sunshine and rainbows. It is a very slippery question you ask, my friend. And I think whether we like it or not, democracy, this country, a democratic society says freedom of speech. Well, if you have this outlet and you can go write you a song and you can put it out of your brother, sister's cousin's garage, then go for it, man. You know, go for it, chick. You know, that's my, because that's what I did. I was nothing, man. I was, you know, I mean, I've always been something because I'm a child of God, but like I was double wide trailers in Northeast Alabama, going to Nocalula Falls for $10 and eating a hamburger and a hot dog. And that's how I grew up. And that's how this country is growing up. And they're fine. That's a great way to grow up. Write your song and get it out. I'm for it, man. I'm for it. And that could be fentanyl addiction and hookers and blow to some. And that could be mud and trucks and Jesus and red worms and a coffee can to some. Who's to say what's right?
It's a great way to put it. When you talk about, when I bring up the name Jelly Roll, he has a great story. Is Jelly Roll somebody in a day that, I don't know, you might disagree with this, but it seems like there's a lot of collaborations going on in country music. I don't know if it's a strategy by labels to get their names out there. If Jelly Roll comes on with Justin Moore or Drake White comes on with Zach Brown, whatever it is, it seems like a strategy, and I'm sure it is. You can answer that. But do you think about this part of the business, this strategy of like every day I wake up, there's a new song out. It's either a duo with two men, a duet with a man and woman. Is it called a duet when it's a woman and woman? Like there's a lot of this going on. Are you strategizing your playbook, Drake White, to follow this? Like, do you wake up and work with your management and say, okay, I want to reach out to Jelly's camp. Jelly's hot right now. If I get a duet or a duo with Jelly, that could be big. I might be on tour, whatever. There's just all these strategies going on. How is your coaching staff strategizing that? How is your playbook being written right now? Or is it just all eyes forward? We're going to tour as much as we possibly can and keep building our audience. How do you strategize this game plan in country music today?
You know good and well that it's always it's a business. You know, it's the music business. And that's a great strategy to go. It's mitigating risk at its finest, you know, to go and diversify into two, somebody like Jelly and myself, say we did a duet. Well, I'm an independent artist. Well, he has a full label staff. You know, we go write a great song together and Jelly says, oh, hey, I'm going to put Drake on it. Well, yeah, that's going to be great for me. It's going to be great for him too, because it's all about a mutually beneficial relationship. And a lot of times managers can really, really help with that. And I've got a great one. And a lot of times managers can really, really get in the way because there is a ego associated with, well, we're the biggest thing. But what I love about friendships and art, and whether it be a, you know, Luke Combs or a Zach Brown, like if I hear a great song, if Jelly hears a great song, I know Jelly. I know him well. And I want to comment on Jelly a little bit, because he is a unbelievable symbol of what needs to happen and should happen in this genre. I love that man to death. The egos in art, a good song is a good song, you know, and it will sink, it'll swim, it'll do whatever, but it always needs a team to push, you know, to push it. There's a lot of great songs that I heard Vince Gill say this. There are a lot of great songs that are not hits, and there's a lot of shit songs that are hits. And that's just the way of the world, you know, and that's the way of commerce. And I try to live where commerce and art intersect, you know, and that's a slippery, as slippery as that question you asked, that slope is. But yes, duos and things like that, that just diversifies risk and it allows a bigger team. So if I've got 10 people on my team, you got 10 people on your team, and you make an army of 20 that are all pushing the same way, well, you're getting the votes, you're getting the this, you're getting the Grammys, you're getting this, like it just works all together. And there's some talented people that know that, but it starts with a song and it starts with a relationship with the artist.
We're gonna break here for a few commercials. I'm fired up. I appreciate y'all being here.
Is country music a big tent genre with enough room for everyone?
You're telling me that it doesn't matter who you are, anybody can be a country music artist now?
Yeah, it's a slippery question, Chad. It really is. I'm dancing around it a little bit, but I think make your art, make your music, and let the people decide if it's country. I mean, would Brantley Gilbert have been country years ago? I don't know.
Jack Daniels presents This Life Ain't For Everybody is powered by Bad Boy Mowers. Mow with an attitude. Check out the cutting edge lineup at badboycountry.com. Chad and Dre, we'll be right back.
What's going on, everybody? Chad Belling coming at you. The Foul Life Podcast is proudly presented by the one and only Bad Boy Mowers. Out of the great state of Arkansas, their zero-turn design and capability is zero to none. I've had these mowers everywhere from California to Georgia, from North Dakota to South Texas. We've put them in situations where they completely perform day in and day out with their power, the sharpness of the blades. Every single bit of that zero-turn capability gives you the advantage, gives you the confidence to get the job done. And now they have added tractors. Our tractors are doing projects for us on a daily basis. All of our duck properties, all of our different dwellings where we live, where we make our livings, we depend on the Bad Boy tractor to get the job done as well. And now you can depend on the Bad Boy power in their new E-series of hand tools. The blower, the trimmer, pull saw, the chainsaw, the backpack blower. We use these blowers in our goose and duck decoy trailers throughout the season, all over the country, blowing out debris, branches, mud, leaves, making sure that we are working in a well-manicured, clean environment is our goal, and that's why we have partnered and depend on everything Bad Boy. Again, out of the state of Arkansas, their mowers are American-made. We depend on them. I hope you do, too. Next time you're in the market for anything that Bad Boy offers, I promise you, you can depend on them. Bad Boy Mowers, the presenting sponsor of Benelli's The Foul Life.
Looking for a high-quality truck accessory that's built to last? Look no further than Lear. With over 50 years of experience in the industry, these guys know what it takes to make your ride look and performance best. Whether you're looking for a fiberglass or aluminum cap, a hard or soft cover, or accessories to customize your truck, Lear's got you covered. Their products are made with only the best materials, and their innovative features provide added convenience and security for truck owners. Head over to Lear.com to explore their range of products and take your driving experience to the next level.
DemerBox is unbelievable. The DB1, the DB2. Look them up at DemerBox.com. Get your new edition today, soon to be the Foul Life edition and the This Life Ain't For Everybody edition. We are so fired up. You can pair them together. We have them around the swimming pool, our backyards, our houses. There's no need to even put surround sound in anywhere. These things sound great. We bring them in the boat, in the field, setting up decoys. No matter where we're at the lake during the summer, we team that up and we listen to our music with a couple fingers on ice. And again, we do it with safety and responsibility in mind.
Whoa, will you spell that? What is it?
D-E-M-E-R.
Dear.
Hey, everybody, you know we are a huge fan of Jack Daniels, not just their product, but their mission, their culture, Lynchburg, Tennessee, the people. And we want to introduce you to the Jack Daniels Single Barrel Program. Join us at jackdaniels.com and learn about the Single Barrel Program, visiting Lynchburg, Tennessee, participating in a barrel tasting, a whiskey tasting, picking your favorite flavor, whether it's the burn in your mouth, whether it's the maple, whether it's the different combination of flavors that you are going to experience in each of the distinct bottles of Jack Daniel's Single Barrel. You're going to be able to choose the best one, your favorite one, and purchase that entire barrel. It all comes bottled in individual single barrel bottles. You get your own hanging name tag, brand tag, your logo on it. You can give them away as gifts. Go knock on the door of a landowner and say, thank you for letting me hunt your field. There's so many options with the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. We're proud to be part of it. We have introduced it to so many of our friends and family across the country, whether it was at a business, whether it was at a duck lodge, whether it was at a conservation event. It is truly an awesome program. Learn more about it at jackdaniels.com. The single single barrel program. We've been involved for the last 5 years. I'm looking at two of my barrels right now. We just got our 2023 barrel in the single barrel rye. Absolutely mesmerizing. My brother Clint's old fashions with it speak for themselves. It's the Jack Daniel's single barrel program. Check it out. Learn about it. I hope you decide to visit Lynchburg, Tennessee and get your own barrel. Thank you very much.
Grab a drink. The second part of Jack Daniel's presents This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding, the Deemer Box Artist of the Month edition featuring Drake White, is about to begin, and it's powered by Bad Boy Mowers. Mow with an attitude.
I've been doing this for going on 20 years, man. I'll never stop because this is my God-given talent.
Drake reflects on some of his previous albums.
Spark, for me, obviously, it was never as big as I thought it should be. I'm very proud of that record.
Oh, I think it's song to song one of the best albums. I mean, very easily could have been nominated for album of the year that year. You had a huge hit with There You Go Making Me Look Good Again on it, but there's so many just great stories.
And he has new music on the horizon.
Are we going to get new music in 2024?
We went and made a 14 song album. It is a body of work. We're about to start releasing that, so I'm extremely excited. This has been a year and a half in the making.
A tip of the hat to Napa Valley Olive Oil, Traeger Grills, Mickey Thompson Tires, and Flask App for supporting This Life Ain't For Everybody. Let's rejoin Chad and Drake.
She plays a mean game of poker. She's got curls in her hair. She looks good on Broadway, more the middle of nowhere.
Okay, so let's just get this out there because I'm a fan of this man called Jelly Roll. I'm a fan of hip-hop. I'm a fan of gangster rap. I'm a huge fan of Eminem. You and I have had many discussions. I remember sitting on a bus with you in probably 2010-11 in Minnesota talking about your admiration for hip hop and the freestyle method of rapping and that. And you have a lot of talent when it comes to that. So when you talk about the admiration for this man called Jelly Roll and you look at his past, and I don't know a lot about his past. I just know that Jesus saved him. He's a God-fearing man. He's not afraid to talk about where he came from and how he went to prison and how now he gives back. He gives back to kids. He gives back to orphans. He gives back to prisons and confinement and people that are struggling in life. He lets his story be told through his song and his lyrics. I'm a fan of what he does. Why has he been so well received by the Nashville community, such as yourself, the people that he's worked with, the people that he plays for? Elton John has hugged him in public. Bruce Springsteen has hugged him in public. There's been many more. Why has this man been so well received? Is it because of his transparency and his honesty and his ability to say, Jesus, save me. I'm a God-fearing man. I'm on my knees. I need help. Like, what made this man be so well received to where when he woke up one day, he sold out Bridgestone Arena? And ever since that day, it seems like he's just been on this climb that's going pretty vertical right now.
Authenticity. You know, what you see is the Bridgestone thing. I mean, there's probably 15 years of him working in Antioch on the corner trying to peddle CDs to try to figure out how to rap and get through addictions, hurts, habits, hangups, all that stuff. And it's really the grace of God. All God's doing in a story like Jelly Roll is, I look at it now, as you look at this guy, big dude, tattoos, not your quintessential country dude. And you hear this story of incarceration. You hear these horrible decisions he made. And you hear all this stuff. And, you know, society had just thrown him away. It takes a miracle like God, a miracle like Jesus, and the sovereignty of him on all-seeing, all-knowing power to see that. And all it does is give Jelly the opportunity to go, you know what? Jesus saved me. And this is the reason that I'm out here doing this. And I may MF, and I may have tattoos on my face, and I may roll 10 joints a day, but I love Jesus and he saved me. And it's a different conduit that our all sovereign, all knowing God uses to exalt his name. And that's all it is. So there's so many instances where people say, oh, well, their kid drowned. How do you explain that? Well, I've also seen a kid drowned in a guy like
Granger Smith.
Granger Smith is, sorry, Granger. I love Granger and consider him a friend, but look what he's doing. Look what a kid drowned. How do you explain a sovereign God, an all-knowing God that lets a kid drown? How do you explain somebody that let your dad pass away? Like, that hurts, the pain. But look at the story that Granger is planning, is leaving behind. He's going, you know what? This is what God knows, that Jelly, going through all that stuff, that he was going to flip it one day in 2023 and win new artists of the world of country music. And he knew he was going to flip it and give him the glory. And that's all he's concerned about. As Christians, and as I understand the Americanized Christian version, I don't want anything to do with that. Like, I understand that people have a lot of people have a sour taste in their mouth when it comes to religion, or when it comes to the Christian way or Christian thing. But I'm telling you, I've been through the valley. Like, I've died twice on the table, been brought back, saw angels, seen the saving power, and seen the all-knowing sovereign power of God. And Jelly is part of that. Granger Smith is part of that. Like, how can you ever justify a kid dying? Well, maybe somebody that's had a kid die that is completely out and suicidal picks up Granger Smith's podcast, or picks up his book, or picks up Jelly and say, you know what? Here's a guy that was cocaine, fentanyl, everything. And if he can make it, I can make it. So I need to know about this guy named Jesus. That's all it is, man. It's all it is. And it's beautiful.
When you talk like that, Drake White, it motivates people like myself. My girlfriend, Anna, is a Southern Christian, God-fearing woman. You met her daughter, Tater. You were gracious enough to bring her on stage and, like, made her dreams come true at 10 years old. Yeah. You're doing things like this on a daily basis, leaving them in your wake of there's this path that you've taken, but you're also leaving these little snippets, like that one little special night in Gainesville, Georgia, meant the world to human beings, that you might have woke up the next day and you were on to the next. I'm not saying that psychologically you don't think about it, of how special that moment was, but you're creating these moments for human beings on the daily. How does it affect you? And I'm kind of taking a selfish approach to this question, because we've all burnt bridges. There's a song by one of the greatest songwriters in the history of the world, in my opinion, that talks about, I crossed the bridge and I lit on fire and I got over there and I wondered how I'm going to get back now because I just burned it. It's called It's Not Easy Being Me by the great Chris Knight. Is he arguably one of the finest of all time?
No, for sure. I love
Okay. Chris. Okay. So we agree on that Kentucky guy. But how do you work it now, Drake, of I'm 49. I want to go back and fix some things. I don't want those bridges to stay burnt.
Mm-hmm.
Do you wake up and think about, like, fixing things from the past like I do? Or does it happen naturally if you take Jesus on, like you just described Jelly Roll did, and they'll come back around and give you the opportunity to make a wrong a right? Will I have a chance to make my wrongs a right? Does this question make sense? Because every day I think about, like, how can you be so the opposite of what you're supposed to be and find so much success and have all of this stuff not handed to you? Because I know hard work plays in it. But I always thought that the better the person you were and the nicer the person you were, that you're going to be the one that's on top. And that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. I made mistakes. I found success. Mm-hmm. I went through a lot of trials and tribulations to get success. I never really chased success. But looking back, I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't handle that situation right. That was the wrong way to be with when you bring into the effect of the human spirit.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate that in your life now? Does it play a role? Or do you think, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And if it's meant to be fixed, it'll come back around and we'll have the opportunity. Or do you seek fixing anything like I do? Or is that the wrong way to be?
No, this is great, man. This is a great, great question. I mean, I think that if it's on your heart, if you burn a bridge or if you have a beef with somebody and it's on your heart and you still haven't said your piece about it and you're like, man, I wish they knew my heart. I think it's important to, I don't know if that's a handwritten letter. I don't know if it's a text. I don't know if it's a voicemail or an email. Whatever, I have this thing that I do where I pray about it. If I feel it on my heart, hey, man, I'm making this up, but I need to call Paul. And it could be 5 years ago. Man, I really got him on my heart. I want to fix it. Maybe a letter pops in my head. We'll write him a letter or shoot him a text or whatever idea that comes to your head. Like, at that point, to me, it's anointed. Like, it came in your heart for a reason. And if you're following the right path and your intentions are right and you are following Jesus and you're trying to be a good steward of his word and a good steward of your heart, and he is in your heart, then you have to follow. Say it's a letter and you write him a letter, man, and you send it to him and you don't hear back, man, it's gone. And dude, I got a buddy that died basically because of drugs. His kidneys shut down. And I mean, I was really good friends with this guy. I loved him. I hadn't talked to him in 6-7 years. I mean, I had business with him. I brought him to Nashville and helped him out a lot. And he stole from me, and he this and he that. But he died without me being able to tell him. And he tried to call me a couple of times. And my Alabama attitude was like, you know, by the way, my rough around the edges attitude was like, you know what? I don't have time for him. Like, if he's going to steal from me, like, I'm not going to answer my phone. But he did leave a voice message and he did apologize. But that guy died before I had the opportunity to shake his hand again. And I never thought that would be the case. So all I'm saying, anybody that's listening out there, if you have something and you're talking to somebody that's almost died at 35 too, by the way, if you have something pressing on your heart, you better go make it right. And if you mail them the letter and they never get back to you, that's on them. That is on them. It is on them. My hands are up. I did what I could do. Lord, you give me the opportunity, however you see fit. And that's all I do. And I don't have a lot of these instances. I don't think I have too many enemies. If I have any enemies, I don't know of it. But I'm not very comfortable to be around all the time. I'm a competitive dude. I'll dig my heels in the ground and say what I think's right. I'm not just a yes man. My yes is my yes, my no is my no. And I strive for perfection. And if that makes you uncomfortable, then I'm out the door. You know, it's just the way it is. And that's rubbed some people in my time. But my intentions are right now. And they always really have been. But I'm not afraid to admit that I've been wrong some. I've tried to make them right. But you send that letter, call up that lifeline, and they don't reciprocate, then that's on them.
I agree with that. I think that there is, you know, a letter might be a weird example if people could always say, well, I didn't get it. But if you do put the effort out there and call them or text them or DM them and you make a valid effort, then I guess it is. It's in their hands now. You've put it out there.
Well, let's relate it to hunting since this is a hunting type podcast. It's an everything podcast. But like hunting, and maybe this is a stretch, but like I've been out there and been so, you know, with ducks. You know, I've been so blessed to hunt in places like Prairie Wings or Honey Break or these places. And I got the doors opened through people like you and through people like, you know, Brandon Adams and these guys and Drew Keith and those opportunities to go out there and fail, to go out there. What I'm trying to make an analogy of is like you can go out there and fail 10 times and be successful once in the timber and you're a successful hunter. You know what I mean? Like it's the persistence of showing up with a heart that I want to do this, that I want to pursue this. I'm trying to pursue peace. I'm trying to pursue love, patience, kindness, the fruits of the spirit. Because God is in my heart, Jesus is in my heart, I'm trying to pursue this animal. And dude, it may be 2 seasons with whitetail. It may be 10. My dad's never killed over 140-inch deer. Poor guy. And it's like, he keeps going because it's about showing up and understanding what's in the woods that day or showing up and understanding what's in their heart. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know why they didn't return the call. I'm, you know, full transparency. I'm waiting on a call right now. I try not to take myself too serious and the injury has definitely helped that ego down, but I've got a really good friend that I've probably got 5, 6, 8 text messages into, and we've all got them. And I don't know why he hasn't texted back. We have some great things. We have some great memories. We have great family time together. And it's just like, well, that's on him. That's on him, you know?
But it's eating at you, or you wouldn't have sent number 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
No, if I'm being full transparency, it obviously has ate at me. I don't let it eat at me day after day. Like it's not something that takes my emotional bandwidth up every day. Like I don't think about it every day. I just really love this dude. And it's like,
have you ever ghosted somebody, Drake White? The art of ghosting is such a cop out. It's so easy. It's so easy because you have this network of people that you've built across this country. I can't just get in my car and drive over and knock at your door and be like, hey, dude, what's up? You know, like I could if I wanted to invest a couple $1,000s on some plane tickets and hotel rooms and such. But you could easily ghost a lot of people that you've met in Louisiana or California or Washington or England. You've been all over the world playing your shows. Have you ever ghosted somebody because they're like,
I don't think I have on purpose. I don't know. Like I said, there's a very high level of frequency that I'm working at, and I demand that frequency, and that seems pretty harsh. And some people jive with that type of talk, and some people are like, ugh, you know. Well, man, it's chill too at the same time. Everybody wants to be the laid back chill dude. And I believe I've accomplished that at times in my life. But there's a frequency that I demand, you know, and if you're coming to me with the same issues that we were dealing with in high school, like, yeah, I'm sure there's some guys from high school I had to cut loose. It's kind of that Snoop Dogg. I know you've seen the Snoop Dogg stuff because you love Snoop. Like, you got to cut those people out. And so there's definitely people I've cut out for sure. So if that's ghosting, yeah, I've probably ghosted some people because it's necessary coming from a small town, coming from any town. Anybody wants to pull me, like, I'm going to Madison Square Garden. And that's what's in my heart. That's what's been in my dreams. And to quote Dave Chappelle, like, I'm a very powerful dreamer.
Wait a minute. You play New York and you've done a great job in building a fan base in a lot of different regions of this world, this country. You just said that you're going to play Madison Square Gardens as an artist. You're going to sell out because people that play Madison Square Gardens don't go there and not sell it out. What is it? I was literally just going into this question as you talk about these different levels of your career. You're selling out everywhere right now. How do you build on that type of momentum? Is it something that you strategize with your management, or how do you cut it out of going, you know what, we're going from 2,500 seats to 12,000 or whatever Madison Square Garden is? How do you make that jump, and how long does it take?
Well, man, with hunting, you go out there and you go, like, let's take whitetail hunting for example. And you go out there and you go, oh, I'm 10 years old, I'm gonna go climb a tree stand, and you don't pay attention to the wind, you don't pay attention to anything. You go up there because you have the time and you climb up it, but you learn from it. The deer comes down, it busts you. Okay, I'm not gonna sit here again, I'm gonna sit over here. And the next time you go, that happens. Well, you go play, you go have an opportunity where you go play for 200 people in New York, all right? And then you chip away. You don't have any money, but you're figuring it out, and you drive a van into New York for the first time, and you almost get ganked in Hell's Kitchen and all the stuff that has happened in New York. But you go play that 50 capacity, and it costs you money, and you go in there, but you played New York City. And then here comes Zach. Somebody comes around and somebody pops, and they give you an opportunity to come play in front of 40,000. So you play in front of 40,000 at Met Stadium with Zach Brown. All right. Well, you go back to hunting. You go back the next time and you're turned 16 and you take all these lessons and you stack the odds. All right. Now I'm going to sharpen and get down all the way down to sharpening my broadheads, because when that broadhead enters the cavity of the deer, it's going to cut and do more damage, which is going to be more lethal shot. So I skipped a bunch of steps, but like, you're stacking the odds. So now I went from these 200 capacity venues where, man, I probably shouldn't eat donuts. Those donuts, that pizza was good. I love New York pizza, but I'm not doing it this time because last time I was sluggish. That's stacking the odds saying I'm not going to eat pizza. Oh, I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to do an ice bath, and I'm going to do a sauna, and I'm going to do a breathing treatment, and I'm going to get together and pray with my guys. That's stacking the odds. So you're stacking them. And then I have the power, and you do too, and anybody out here listening, to manifest anything that they want in this world. I have said the Madison Square Garden thing because that's one of the most renowned places in our country, right? Everybody knows what that is. Every time I voice it, I'm putting that frequency in the air that I'm going to pack out Madison Square Garden. So then the fans go, I'll be there. He said he was going to do this. Drake's going to pack out Madison Square. How's he going to do it? So you ask, how am I going to do it? It's by thinking like this every day. It's by sticky notes on my window and then going and working out and creating the body I want, the temple I want, creating the voice, the songs that I want, from writing, even calling my friends, your Jonathan Singletons and your guys out there that have been so great, to pick up the phone and go write these songs. It's continuing to write when you don't want to get in the ice bath when you don't want to say yes to Alex and help her with the groceries or help her with the kids when you really want to go out here and kill a turkey. Like, saying, yeah, doing the right thing. And that goes back to the fruits of the spirit and making sure that that's in you. So stacking the odds is a combination of years of right decisions. And I am full transparent and confident when I say this, that I've made a lot of mistakes and I've been a shithead before, but I've made good decisions and my intentions have always been right when it comes to my fans and this music. And I'm just slowly stacking the odds towards Madison Square Garden. And when you do that in hunting and you get to the point where you're like, all right, I've checked my wind, I've washed my clothes, I've got my bow right, I've got my fitness right, I've got my tree stand noise free, I've came in, exit and entries, like I planted these grasses that hide me from this thing, and here comes this deer and I stick an arrow through his heart, I pack out the Ryman Auditorium. That was a full circle moment. That deer laying on the ground is a full circle moment. So maybe it was a stretch. I hope it all connected, but like it's stacking the odds and making those right decisions, because that's discipline. And that's the hardest part of all this. Like, don't eat the crap, eat good stuff. And you're going to feel better to go do it. You know, you're going to be healthier. And this injury has really made me focus in on that. You know, am I as in the best shape I've ever been in? No, I'm not, but I will be.
So is it just a timing mechanism that goes off in Drake White's mind of like, it's time? Was it just time for the Ryman? Is it just going to be time when you announce Madison Square Gardens? You say that it's stacking the odds in your favor. Are they there? And how do you know they're there?
Well, that's the controllables, right? Like, I can control these odds that I'm talking about. The uncontrollables, I can't worry about that stuff. And I do sometimes. I do. I have a call today that is not an easy call. And I have to go for it. You've heard of the bull and the bison, how the bison runs straight into the storm and the storm lasts half as long, as opposed to the bull runs away from the storm and the storm lasts twice as long for the bull that run away from the storm, and the bison ran straight through the storm. It lasts half as long. So I run towards stuff, and I think running towards stuff scares the shit out of people, because I think for the most part, you can hide behind your keyboard. You can hide behind your socials and your perception is reality type of sayings in this business and in our things. And you can never work on yourself and work on your things. And then you melt down and you start crying and something happens one day where you're just like, you've hit rock bottom. So I didn't answer your question, but like for me, it's a culmination of the moment, the opportunity coming. Like if you're always ready, you don't have to get ready. You know what I mean? Like when the opportunity comes, you know what's going to happen when I walk up on the stage with Jimmy Fallon or when I walk up on the stage of Madison Square Garden. And I'm not pompously speaking. I believe that will happen because I've dreamt it, you know, and I've never said dreamt. I've dreamed it. You know, I've dreamed these things. I've seen them in my, so I've watched Stapleton interviews. I've watched George Strait interviews and I love their stoicism and I love how humble they are, but man, there's no buts to that. I love that. My heart is humble, but like I've seen those things. So if you take it pompous, that the confidence of me packing out Madison Square Garden, I battle that a lot. Like, man, I hope I don't sound pompous in this. Like now after that injury and after I've came out of that, like I have the authority to say, no, I'm doing this because I've seen it. I've seen it in my dreams and I'm going for it. And I'm going to give all the glory to God and we're going to the top and I'm going to do some great things with the platform.
I love it. Are we going to get new music in 2024? Is there a new album on the horizon? Are you writing right now? What's the status of Drake White's new music right now?
So dude, we're about to start releasing new music May the 10th. We're going to do the kind of the waterfall thing where you just release a song a month until, you know, we're independent artists and we're doing that by choice. You know, I used to not wave the independent flag too much because a lot of people that were waving it so hard, it was because they really couldn't get a record deal. You know, the majors, they didn't have the opportunity or whatever. But now I think that the business has changed so much that like the longer you can kind of hang in there and continue to create freely and create how you want to, I think the better off you are, the more you can own your masters and understand what these contracts say and understand long term what they mean for your business and your family and your ability to keep doing it freely. We've got a whole record recorded. It's finished. It's in the mastering process, if you know what that means. And Jonathan Singleton, he produced it. And we went down to Mississippi to this little place outside of Corinth, Mississippi. And We recorded it with a bunch of great musicians, and dude, it's Appalachian soul funk, you know, just writing what I wanted to write in the moment. But it's a culmination of all of this stuff that has happened. And, you know, the bridge, we just released the bridge EP, and that bridge was to get us back to this, over this obstacle, which was the stroke, which was the drop record deals, which was all the stuff that you're talking about, the mind stuff, the battle between the brain, between the ears that I went through, and just getting back to a place to over that bridge and getting back to a place that made me fall in love with music and life and everything in general. And now I just have a lot more experience and I'm a lot more sound and peace, kind of peaceful about it. You know,
it's kind of funny. The analogy we talked about, Chris Knight and the burnt bridge, and your new album is about a bridge that gets you over to a peaceful spot to where you can.
Well, the EP is called The Bridge, that EP that we just released, you know, but it's all going to tie together and I can't reveal it right yet. Because we haven't done that yet, but we're making an, you know, I wanted to make an album, and, you know, who knows if that is the right, back to your original question of, do you stay in your lane? I love albums. I have a stack of them over here, from Marshall Tucker Band to Prince to Run DMC. And I think I see Tupac over there. Like, literally, I've got tons of albums, and we made an album. We went and made a 14 song album that is a body of work, you know. We're about to start releasing that. So I'm extremely excited because it's been since, well, Optimistic was an album, but Optimistic was like me shoving a stone up a mountain for Optimistic, because that was me just saying, I got to release music. And nothing again. I love that album. I love the Optimistic. I love a lot of songs on it, but this has been a year and a half in the making. So
do we have a name for it yet?
Yeah, I can't reveal it yet, but we're close. We're going to start releasing. We're releasing a song called 10 Pounds of Shit in a 5-Pound Bag that we're playing live some May the 10th.
May 10th on all streaming services.
Yeah.
And Drake White's on tour right now. Is this the Bridge Tour?
Yeah.
And you have your good friend Adam Hood on the road with you?
Oh, man. Yeah. Adam's, you know, I don't know if you know the history between me and Adam, but I went to Auburn, graduated in 2007, 2006, 5, and 4. Adam was at Fat Daddy's every Tuesday night. Which is a place right down the road from the trailer park, which all of my buddies lived in. And I was not playing music in college. I was playing some, but Adam Hood was one of the first ones that I saw. It was like, I can do that. That's what I do. Like, and I started, always been a huge fan of Adam. And he's an example of the business will push a million people to try to open up for when you're selling tickets like we are. And not to toot our own horn, but it's Adam. I was like, I want Adam Hood because of this story, because what I'm telling you, I care about that guy. People need to hear him. He's phenomenal. And he's a family man. He loves the Lord, and he's just a great dude. So he's on the bus with us. Like he's part of the band right now. So it's been a lot of fun. And he's a funny dude.
I love Adam Hood. Great songwriter. Drake White, thank you so much for being here. I could talk to you all day about your career, the business of music in Nashville. I love Nashville. I hope to have a farm like you do in the vicinity someday, in the proximity of Broadway, Music Row, Music Valley. A lot of good things going on, my man. I'm watching. I love seeing all the success, and I hope you come west. I hope you guys get some Western shows coming soon. Are you out west anytime soon?
We usually jump across the Mississippi like Q2, Q3. We're pretty much here through June and July. Got a really cool show coming up in at the Floribama with Riley Green and those guys. April the, I think, 13th, 14th, whatever that spring break deal is right there. So that'll be a lot of fun. But, yeah, we'll be across the Mississippi Q3, Q4.
All right, my man. Well, thank you for being here. DrakeWhite.com. You guys all know how we feel about Drake's music. We listen to it nonstop. We were listening to it this morning. Anna V's out here right now at Tater, and we were jamming your music. We've been jamming three artists. We named two of them on here, Drake White, Adam Hood, and their great friend, Brent Cobb. I think Brent Cobb's from Georgia, and then Adam and Drake are from Alabama. A lot of good music coming out of that part of the country. Drake, thank you, my man.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
We'll be back with another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody. Hold on one second, Drake White. While I sign off, This Life Ain't For Everybody, brought to you by the one and only Tennessee Sour Mash Whiskey, Jack Daniel's, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Enjoy it responsibly. Never allow underage drinking. I love getting about two fingers of Jack Daniel's Old Number 7 and listening to Drake White. I love a lot of his songs. Go get you some Back to Free. Go get you some Optimistic, the Bridge album, the EP. And I can't wait for the new 14-song album coming soon. We will announce it on our socials and all of our platforms as soon as I get more news from the great Drake White. Thank you all for the downloads and subscriptions. We'll be back at you with another episode right here at Jack Daniel's Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody.
Where'd that dirt-faced, barefoot rebel kid go? He's still crawled dead fishing at the watering hole.
The country music business is competitive, and optimism is what carries Drake through it.
You're telling me that it doesn't matter who you are, anybody can be a country music artist now?
Yeah, it's a slippery question, Chad. It really is. I'm dancing around it a little bit, but I think make your art, make your music, and let the people decide if it's country. I mean, would Brantley Gilbert have been country years ago? I don't know.
Bad Boy Mowers, Rigid Lights, Gator Coolers, and Scoreboard Nashville bring you this episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody, the Deemer Box Artist of the Month edition. Chad Belding and Drake White will be right back.
It's rodeo season. I love the PRCA. I love the PBR. I love the Western cowboy lifestyle, farming, ranching, working cattle, mending fences, Chris LeDoux, songs about rodeo, songs about the cowboy life. I enjoy it. Sometimes I wish I would have been a cowboy. I was a country boy. But I had asthma, I was allergic to horses, but I'm envious of the cowboy lifestyle. Living it every day, and that's exactly what Resist All does. From supporting farming, ranching, rodeo, conservation, outdoors, making products right here in America to make sure that the cowboy nation, the cowboy culture, the Western lifestyle is always taken care of. Living it every day. You can find Resist All in every rodeo arena, in every feed store. If you're going in to buy chicken feed, you're going to see a Resist All logo. Their family of brands with Cactus Saddlery, Cactus Ropes, it's second to none. Resist All cowboy hats. It's what we believe in. We wear them. We don't leave home without them. We have them to protect us from the elements. We scout ducks and geese in them. We hunt ducks and geese in them. We barbecue in them. We butcher in them. We process in them. We love the culture of Resist All, and we truly live it every single day in everything that we do. The respect that we have for the animals is the same exact respect that cowboys and cowgirls have for bucking bulls, bucking horses, the steer, the calves, you name it. The respect and lives that these animals are getting to live in the rodeo culture is exactly what we support. We're all about the ethics, and so is Resist All. Thank you, Resist All, for being the official cowboy hat of the Foul Life Podcast and the Foul Life TV. We travel a lot. We're up and down America's highways, byways, thoroughways, cornfields, dirt roads, back roads, country roads. Love seeing that dust in our rear view. Love looking over and seeing the sunset, the sunrise, mallard ducks pitching in to a pond in Kansas, a coyote howling in Wyoming, an antelope standing on the side of the road in Nevada. We get to do this all through Ford trucks. Corning Ford, Paul, Francis, the entire crew, the customer service, the service department, the selection, the dedication to excellence and quality. The number one Ford Super Duty dealer in the Western United States 5 years in a row. They're in the top 10 in the country, and they're in a little tiny town, Corning, California. 5,000 people deep maybe, but the construction, the farming, the ranching, the almonds, the walnuts, the olives, the duck hunting, the fishing, the deer hunting and turkey hunting, predator hunting, you name it. Corning Ford is part of it. They support our lifestyle, their pricing. They refuse to mark them up. Give them a try. They'll deliver your truck anywhere in the country. They've delivered them to Alaska, Florida, so many to Nevada, so many to Northern California, all over Arizona and Colorado. They've delivered three to Tennessee. They delivered one to Minnesota to our friend Andrew at Wild Acre Kennels. It's Corning Ford. They support the outdoors, and there's nothing better than a Ford truck. These 2023 Ford Super Duties, F-250s, F-350s, the long bed, the short bed, the Tremor package. Watch your speed. Set that cruise control, because sometimes you'll look down and be like, I'm not going that fast. Something's got to be broken. And you're pulling a trailer, and you got a leer topper on the back of it. The bed of your truck is full. They're meant for hauling. They're meant for towing. Thank you, Francis. Thank you, Paul. There's nowhere better in the country to buy your next Ford vehicle or Ford Super Duty truck than Corning Ford. Thank you all for supporting them. We started American Almond Beef with the mentality to be different, to set ourselves apart, and that's the road that we're on. Our feedlots are clean. our feed is different. Our approach to making sure that our cattle and steers are raised right. There is a story behind American Almond Beef. Northern California ranchers and farmers, the almonds, the commodity business, everything coming together to provide a feed that allows for this marbling, the flavor, the texture, the finish. American Almond Beef is where it's at. I'm telling you, get an order placed, try it for yourself, and you will not go back to regular store-bought beef. AmericanAlmondBeef.com. Thank you very much for the support. We can't wait for you to try it. We've talked about the Western lifestyle so much here when it comes to rodeo, when it comes to quarter horses, when it comes to ranching, when it comes to farming, conservation, hunting, fishing, outdoors, family, friends, memories, culture, reminiscing, the stories, the campfires. We love it all. We've brought you American Almond Beef, we've brought you Buck and Bull, and now we bring you Cowboy Choice. Are you a horse lover? Are you into rodeo? Are you into trail riding? Are you into ranching? Are you into farming? Horses are America. We love horses, we love everything about them, and Cowboy Choice is the ultimate blend of food to keep your horses healthy, strong, their energy levels up, and most importantly, keeping them happy through their entire time on earth. Again, horses are part of our family, they're part of our everyday life, and we live it every day at Cowboy Choice. So when you're in your retailer, ask them, do you carry Cowboy Choice? Because a lot of them are starting to. It will be the number one horse feed on the market in the next 2 years. Mark my words, it's Cowboy Choice. It's the best horse feed we have ever seen results out of. We tested it for over 18 months before we went to market with it. The effects that it's had on horses, the performance that we've seen out of horses that are eating the Cowboy Choice on a daily basis are head and shoulders above anything we've ever witnessed or experienced. Cowboy Choice, the official horse feed of the Fowl Life podcast. You can find it at your nearest feed store, pet store, ranching store. Cowboy Choice, thank you all so much for trying it. We know you're going to make the transition. Thank you all so much for supporting Cowboy Choice horse feeds.
Thanks for hanging out with us on this episode of Jack Daniel's Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding, the Diemer Box Artist of the Month edition, featuring Drake White. It was fueled by Bad Boy Mowers and Tractors.
All right, my man. Well, thank you for being here. DrakeWhite.com. You guys all know how we feel about Drake's music. We'll be back at you with another episode right here at Jack Daniel's Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody.
Listen to new and archived episodes of This Life Ain't For Everybody anytime on SoundCloud, iHeart, Spotify, and thislifeaintforeverybody.com. Be on the lookout for new music from Drake White. We'll catch you on the next episode.